Must come to order.
You haven't talked about it.
I know, that's what.
I know, I wish, wait, don't get mad.
All right.
I'll stand slightly at ease. Would the House please come to order and the members please indicate their presence by voting. Madam Clerk, if you tally the board.
26 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record reflect that Representatives Osterman, Dyson, and Nicolai have previously been excused from the call of the House today, that Representative Green is excused due to illness, and that Representative Hudson is still excused due to a family emergency.
Those members will be shown as excused. Leading the invocation today is Major Neil Timpson, Salvation Army. Will the members please rise for the invocation?
Before we pray, I just want to share some information with you. Last week at Haines, the Salvation Army became 100 years old in Alaska. And we have a book that was written on it, and I will be sharing with a book for each of you through Bill Hudson's office so that you can know what the Salvation Army did and does in Alaska. Okay. Thank you. What a great week to share with you this prayer time. A week that started with palm branches all over the city of Jerusalem and ended in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The week began with the cheers of Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, and later ended at one point by the same crowd crying, crucify him. You may be able to relate with that statement because when you were elected to these positions, everyone was saying that you were the answer to all the problems in Alaska. And now with some of the things you're having to deal with, some people may be saying, crucify him. But I want you to know, you need to hang in there because, as Tony Campolo once said, it may be Friday, but Sunday's coming. Let's pray. Lord, this week, this holy week that we now celebrate, I pray for the legislature and the duties that they have. It is a massive undertaking. And I pray for strength for them to be able to face the task ahead and stand tall. It may be Friday, but Sunday's coming. Amen.
Representative Porter, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread upon the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 82nd, 83rd, and 84th legislative days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the journal as certified by the Chief Clerk be approved.
Without objection, the House Journal stands approved. This brings us down to introduction of guests. Do we have guests today for introduction? Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery is a person I've known for quite a few years. He's from Petersburg. He's one of those great fishermen, and not only that, he's starting to dabble in buying oil leases. Would you help me welcome Johnny Winters?
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to introduce in the Taylor Gallery a friend of mine and poach from someone somewhere and unabashedly do it. A person well known to all of us, I'd like to welcome again to Juno with the words, the saddest words of tongue or pen are those it might have been. Jim Campbell.
Representative Berkowitz.
Just a note to the hillside poacher. I'll get him next time.
Further guests for introduction? Representative Masick.
Madam Speaker, under announcements of guests last Friday, I just want to make a correction. When I introduced a constituent of mine Mayor Darcy Salmon from the Matanuska Valley. I said he was mayor of Wasilla. Just want to let the body know that he's the mayor of the Matsu Borough. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further guests for introduction? House stand at ease. This brings us down the calendar to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
House stand at ease. Messages from the other body?
A message dated April 3rd stating the Senate has passed CS for Senate Bill 334, Finance, by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Guidelines and Standards for State Training Programs Relating to the Alaska Human Resource Investment Council, extending the termination date of the State Training and Employment Program, and providing for an effective date. It's transmitted for consideration.
Labor and Commerce and Finance?
I have no further messages from the other body, Madam Speaker.
Communications?
From the Department of Administration, Division of Personnel, reporting the monetary terms of the collective bargaining agreement reached between the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska and the United Academics.
I'll be referred to the Finance Committee for action.
From the Department of Fish and Game, the status of brown bears and other natural resources in the McNeil River State Game Sanctuary Refuge annual report. And the Alaska status report of the domestic violence and sexual assault. I have no further communications, Madam Speaker.
Reports of standing committees?
The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 12, Immunity for Equine Activities, recommending it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 12, Finance, with the new title, recommending DuPass, Mulder, and Davis. No recommendation, Terry O'Kelly, Hanley, Davies, and Moses. Amend Grusendorf. The report was signed by Hanley and Terrio, co-chairs. House Bill 12 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 451, Assistive Technology and Mobility Aids, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 451, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending due pass, Calgary, Bryce, Kavina, Ryan, and Roquefort. The report was signed by Roquefort, Chair. House Bill 451 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Finance Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 76, Rules, State Long-Term Planning, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 76, Finance, with the same title, recommending due pass, Terrio, Mulder, Kelly, and Foster. No recommendation, Moses, Davis, and Hanley. Amend, Davies, and Grusendorf. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. CSSB 76, Rules, has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 158, Labor and Commerce, Insurance Changes for Driver's License Revocation, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 158, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommending due pass, Calgary, Kavina, Ryan, and Roquefort. No recommendation, Bryce. The report was signed by Roquefort Chair. CSSB 158, LNC, has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Communications?
No. No.
Citations or resolutions for introduction?
A citation honoring Wayne Mergler by Senator Ellis. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Bills today for introduction?
House Bill 482 by the House Transportation Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Registration of Non-Commercial Trailers and to registration of vehicles owned by disabled persons or persons who are 65 years of age or older, and providing for an effective date.
Be referred to the Transportation Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction.
This brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 380 by Representative Hodgins, entitled An Act Relating to a Temporary Reduction of Royalty on Oil and Gas Produced for Sale from Fields Within the Cook Inlet Sedimentary Basin where production is commenced in fields that have been discovered and undeveloped or that have been shut in. The House Special Committee on Oil and Gas considered the bill, recommended it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 380, Oil and Gas, with the same title, attached to fiscal note, recommending due pass, Hodgins, Roquefort, and Price. No recommendation, Ryan, Kimplin, and Bundy. Amend, Ogun. The report was signed by Hodgins, Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 380, Finance, with a new title, recommending DuPass, Davis, Coring, and Mulder. No recommendation, Terry O'Kelly and Martin. Amend Grusendorf. The report was signed by Terry O'Co-Chair. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for HB 380 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader. I'll stand at ease. The bill will be held in third reading for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 462 by the House Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Contents of Certain State Documents. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 462, State Affairs, with the same title, attached to zero fiscal note, recommending DuPass, James, Ivan, and Dyson. No recommendation, Elton and Berkowitz. The report was signed by James, Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 462, State Affairs, with the same title, recommending DuPass, Terrio, Mulder, Coring, Kelly, and Foster. Do not pass, Davies. No recommendation, Grusendorf. The report was signed by Terrio, co-chair. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute for HB 462 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the State Affairs Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader. Like the previous bill, House Bill 462 will be held in third reading for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for House Bill 168, rules by the House Rules Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Use of Traditional Means of Access to Assist in Taking Game or Fish into Traditional Means of Access for Traditional Outdoor Activities on Land and Water Set Aside for Fishing Game Purposes and Providing for an Effective Date. We're in third reading.
Representative Masick.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 168 is pretty much an access bill. In our previous sessions that we've had, we passed similar bills, and this bill deals with the Department of Fish and Game and the Fish and Game Board. And what it does, Madam Speaker, it requires the boards to seek legislative approval before closing down access for a long period of time. One of the things the bill does not do, though, it does provide the Department of Fish and Game or the Board of Game to close down an area if it has biological problems. And also, what it does, it does not go into the Department of Natural Resources. And it does not go into areas such as the state parks. And I recommend that all members vote for this bill. It just gives a protection for the people of the state of Alaska on access dealing with just hunting and fishing. And I ask for everyone's support. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Representative Grusendorf?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think all of us here realize how difficult it is for a member of the Fish and Game Board to not only get the nomination, but to be confirmed by the legislative body. And the Fish and Game Board, the way it's presently made up, is made up of individuals of very diverse backgrounds, and unfortunately, many of them are there by certain political persuasions that came in confirmation. Because of this, Madam Speaker, when the Board of Fish or the Board of Game makes a decision, my conclusions are very simple, and that is there is a problem that has been recognized by this group of people, that certain rules and regulations have to be made to protect a spawning bed, a nesting area, a wintering area, winter range, and sometimes these do not fit within the 640 acres that has been suggested here. Considering the fact that the Board of Fish and Game does make some decisions that make some people unhappy when they're pursuing building up the stock, protecting areas, we can look at other aspects here. The traditional modes or traditional means of access. Now, I think that depends quite a bit upon your time frame and how you look at things. Without a doubt, walking, snowshoeing and skiing are pretty old, and I guess that'd be traditional. My only objections in some cases is some of these people wear certain colors that are very bright, fluorescent, that anything that color in the woods would have already flown south for the winter. But other than that, these people are out there. They leave a very little impact on what we're trying to do in regards with our fish and game and wildlife management. Mushing, that certainly is old. Horseback riding, well, okay. We can, I suppose, talk in terms of llamas next. Then we come to aircraft, fixed wing. Okay, that has a certain tradition here. But then again, the question comes, when does a helicopter become part of these traditional means of transportation? It's like boating. Madam Speaker, when you say boating, there are many different types of boats. We're talking airboats, we're talking hydrofoils, we're talking about boats that maybe 40 years ago were even beyond our dreams of where these boats could go and what type of access they can have. And all of this to me suggests, Madam Speaker, that there has to be certain rules and regulations, especially when we get into this last category, operation of all-terrain vehicles. Now, this, of course, includes snow machines. Now, Madam Speaker, I'll have to admit that I am prejudiced on this issue. And my prejudice perhaps is unfair to some of those very responsible people that do run snowmobiles and four-wheelers and other vehicles such as that, maybe even Humvees. But nonetheless, there is a problem that has to be looked at, and I certainly would like the Board of Game to be the ones that do that, and we just simply don't make a blanket statement in regards to the use of these. Now, let me get to my prejudice. And prejudice oftentimes is formed very young in your life. And what I'm trying to get at here is a lot of these things may be traditional means for those people that are 35 years and younger. But you've been around for a while. Some of these means are not traditional means. I grew up, as most of you know, in northern Minnesota, and when I was in high school, about a little bit earlier, about this time of year, I decided to go into a shack that I had built on the Continental Divide, and I was snowshoeing into that place, and all of a sudden there were some strange tracks that came up out of a drainage and onto my main trail. I recognized them for what they were. I could tell that the night had sat over those tracks. And, you know, I had seen these vehicles. They were kind of yellow at one time, and they were called ski-doos, and they were on some of the bigger lakes in Minnesota, but you never saw them any other place. And I started following this track because it was going in my direction, and all of a sudden, they veered off. And I kind of looked, and I could see that there was a deer that had been standing there, and the deer did the typical white-tail pronk, showing that it indeed was healthy and don't bother to chase me because you can't catch me. And so I followed those tracks where I could, where they weren't run over by these snowmobile tracks. And I saw a certain bit of desperation in those tracks as it broke through and as it plowed and as it struggled to get through. When it got down to a little lake that basically was beaver created, evidently they had trapped that deer on that small piece of pond and would not let it seek cover. When I found it, Madam Speaker, that deer was dead. It was still warm. And I could see where the snowmobiles had parked about 20 feet on either side of it, and the people had got out and walked over and looked at it. They didn't touch it, and then got back on their snowmobiles and then headed down to the drainage out, I suppose, to the road, opposite in the direction that I was going. And I couldn't help but look down at that deer, and in my mind's eye, I brought it to the late spring and perhaps its two spotted fawns I was going to have. And therefore, Madam Speaker, years ago, I came to the conclusion that we now had a new thing in the woods that was going to definitely break the stillness of those brutal, hard winters, that there was going to be a problem. And I don't know. I honestly think those people that ran that deer, that doe down into the snow, thought that when they left that that deer was going to recover and get up and leave. But at that time of the year when things are tough, they had burned off all of her reserve that she had probably drove her into shock, and there was no way she was going to make it to the remaining 3 weeks till breakup. Now, that sounds kind of sad, Madam Speaker, but I recognize that, and it bothered me. About 4 years ago or so, maybe some of you had a chance to see some of the aerial photos that were taken here in Alaska. And the aerial photos was of a snowfield, and they kind of followed it. And it was from a spring bear hunt. And what happened is that evidently a group of snowmobilers had taken off on all points of the compass, took out, ran about 20 miles till one of them spotted a bear track, and then using the traditional means of the cell phone, called the rest of the wolf pack in. And the sad part in looking at that trail, Madam Speaker, they're using small bore rifles. Their intent was not a clean kill, and their intent was not fair chase. And there are some areas in the springtime where the Board of Game realizes that certain areas have to be protected depending upon the bear count. Now, what is all this leading up to, Madam Speaker? Well, you know, those people that are responsible users of these snow machines and four-wheelers have an obligation, and that obligation is to make sure that things like this do not happen and that they're reported. And in some cases where you have wintering areas where some of the animals are driven off the alpine or down into the low valleys and things, these places need protection, moose wintering ranges, perhaps caribou wintering ranges, definitely when you're talking about nesting areas or spawning areas. I don't think we should handicap the Board of Fish and Game by passing something like this that very obviously will not fit. And Madam Speaker, I apologize once again to those responsible users of these machines, but we have to realize that the animal kingdom cannot keep up with our technology, and sometimes the type of person that might not venture out in the wintertime is now doing so, and maybe unwittingly creating stress upon certain situations where they think that they're doing no harm, but perhaps they are. Let the Board of Game make that determination. Thank you.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I rise in support of this legislation. And I certainly understand what the former speaker has said, that there are indeed some irresponsible people that ride snow machines. There are irresponsible people in every walk of life. Madam Speaker, there's nothing in this legislation that would affect existing control use areas. There's five separate provisions that would allow the Board of Game to make provisions that relate to protecting the environment. Now, Madam Speaker, when the speaker from Sitka spoke about the diversity of the Board of Game, let me tell you my perception of that diversity of the Board of Game. Madam Speaker, there was most recently a provision before the Board of Game, a regulation that would allow them to close all of Game Management Unit 13 to any kind of motorized vehicles. Madam Speaker, Game Management Unit 13 is a very, very large game management unit. That game management unit was specifically excluded in legislation in the past from being closed to access by motorized vehicles. However, this board was intent upon making this particular area off limits to control or to motorized vehicles. That piece of that regulation is presently in a subcommittee of the Board of Game. Madam Speaker, when you have a board that will tell you publicly that they look upon your laws as floors, not a ceiling, that they can do whatever they want with, you've got a problem with your board. Makes no difference how diverse it is. And once we have confirmed these ladies and gentlemen, they think that they are the ones that should make all the decision that relates to the resources of the state. Nothing could be further from the truth. We, as the legislative branch, establish policy and delegate a certain amount of our responsibility to the Board of Fish and the Board of Game. We do not delegate all of our responsibility, nor do we say that the laws that we pass are a floor for them to look at as a floor, not a ceiling. Now, Madam Speaker, when you have boards that will restrict access even though it is deemed appropriate in laws that you have passed, then it becomes necessary to pass other pieces of legislation to guarantee access to the public of Alaska, the public that owns the resources. And I don't believe that the lion's share of the public is out to damage resources in any stretch of the imagination. We do, as I say, have irresponsible people. But those irresponsible people, there are other laws to make sure that if they violate those laws, that they pay accordingly. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Every fall and winter, my dad, little brother, and I go out deer hunting out on Kodiak Island. Say little brother, he's about 6'5 and 300 pounds, but he's always little brother to me. And we go out, this time we took the ferry, we've flown various times, but take the ferry out and go out of Port Lyons. And this last time, we got on the ferry with a group, we drove on, had the car parked in Port Lyons and took a boat out to where we go. But we're on with a group of four-wheelers. There were about six in that group. Group, I guess. Maybe it's a herd of four-wheelers. I'm not sure. But that was a hard luck crew. I think it was their first time out. Their stuff was some of their equipment maybe not appropriate for that area. They were trying it out, and more power to them. But our thought almost the entire ferry ride was, I hope they go anywhere but where we usually hunt. We usually hunt in a gorgeous place. You can see Afognak and Raspberry Islands. And even if we don't get anything on a particular day, the hike up, the 1,500-foot hike up to the little valley where we know there are often deer, the sitting and eating your lunch, looking at that view, but mainly the quiet of it, the ability to... Not just ability, what it forces you to do. The thing I like best about hunting, I think, is it forces me to be quiet. I like the meat, I like the camaraderie in the cabin, but I like the quiet time of hunting the best. And I was. It turned out this hard luck herd of four-wheelers went to another area out of Port Lyons, but I would like to see the Board of Game continue to have the power to allocate for different hunting experiences, to close and open areas so that experience, which my family has enjoyed for a long, long time, can be preserved. It doesn't mean they're irresponsible. It doesn't mean, and I don't know anything to indicate, that four-wheeler hunters are any more irresponsible than walking hunters. That's sort of, for me, not the point. The point is the board ought to have the ability to allocate something short of biologically essential. I mean, what I hope is that they'd be able to put aside some areas for quiet hunters as well as those that use motorized access. And that's why I think that this piece of legislation goes too far. You know, the prior speaker spoke about a floor and a ceiling. I think there's a lot to that analogy, and I worry that, as in a house, if you construct your floor too close to your ceiling, you just don't have any room to move around. I hope that we'd allow the board the room to allocate for different uses and to, in particular, selfishly, I guess, protect that special quiet use that I have of a certain part of Alaska.
Further debate? Representative Elton.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I think that the previous speaker hit on something very important. I mean, I don't think that the conflicts that the Board of Fish or the Board of Game deal with are conflicts between fishers and non-fishers or hunters and non-hunters. Often what happens is the boards are trying to accommodate the different kinds of users of the resource. And Madam Speaker, we talk about floors and we talk about ceilings. And I don't think anybody on this floor would suggest that the legislature doesn't have a role when decisions are made, especially if we feel they are inappropriate decisions. But, Madam Speaker, by doing what we contemplate doing today, what we're essentially doing is we're taking one tool out of each of the board's tool belt. And, Madam Speaker, I'd suggest that doing that at a time in which our game management and our fish management is much more complex than it was 30 years ago. I mean, if we just look at the types of uses that we have on our fish resources side, I mean, we've got commercial, we've got sport, we've got personal use, we've got subsistence. We've got a much larger population. The pressures on our fisheries resources and our game resources are much greater. Madam Speaker, I think we've all heard some of the examples, or people have presented to us some of the examples where these conflicts kind of come into play. One of the examples that I've heard about was the Potter Marsh area, or the Palmer Flats. I'm sorry, not Potter Marsh, but Palmer Flats, where different types of boat users want to access the resource, and the impacts that that has on other users, and the impacts that that has on the natural resources that are on the Palmer Flats. Madam Speaker, I guess what bothers me about this approach is it is an approach that mandates that one of the tools now used by the Board of Game and by the Board of Fish is off the tool belt. It comes at a time, Madam Speaker, where we have fewer enforcement people than the smaller states do. It comes at a time where our management biology force is now smaller than it was pre-pipeline. And, Madam Speaker, I think that we need to keep the options that are available to the Board of Game and to the Board of Fish so that they can use them. Hopefully they'll use them appropriately. If we feel that they've been used inappropriately, I'm sure that there are remedies. I mean, we've seen the way those remedies have been mandated by the legislature and by other policymakers. So I would just encourage the body to vote no, to maintain the management options that both of the boards now have, and let's assume that they will be used appropriately. Let's assume that a bull hunter is not going to be competing at certain times with people who hunt by rifle. Let's assume that those who want a backpacking experience when they're taking a dall sheep aren't going to have to worry about ORVs or helicopters. Let's assume that the technology that we have seen in transportation, the shorter takeoff landings, the more efficient ORVs, the better snow machines, let's assume that the Board of Game, especially when it comes to these off-road vehicles, let's assume that the Board of Game can maintain different times of use, different areas of use, and if they don't and they make an inappropriate decision, then that's the time we become involved. Not at this point in time, and I'd encourage members of the body to vote no.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Keep my remarks fairly brief. With regards to some of the comments made on a particular instance in one of the game management units where there was an attempt to close down access by recreational vehicles, I think that was an excellent example to bring up, but also to use that same example to show that the process is working. Whether it was a public outcry that said, no, don't close that to recreational vehicles, or involvement of members of either of the bodies, this process was shown to have worked. They didn't follow their first inclination to completely shut the thing down and have instead responded to the people that did not want this to occur, put it into a subcommittee, and are looking at it. That's the process at work. When I asked the department whether there was any biological or management reasons for the legislation, they said no. Very simple. On the other end of this, I wonder, should the legislation pass, what impacts would that have on seasons, bag limits, or even closures of areas? This is a tool that our boards have that gives them a flexibility of addressing issues in a particular area where they see a problem. And that particular area, they can impose a restriction, they can also lift that same restriction. And I would ask members of the body to vote no.
Representative Ogden.
Madam Speaker, I rise in support of the bill. I take issue with a couple of comments made here today. It is currently illegal to harass animals with any kind of motorized vehicle or anything. A description of the member from Sitka who always enjoy his debates about animals. He has some good ones, but the activity that he described clearly would have been illegal already under existing state laws. This bill does not affect that at all. As far as helicopters and being used for any kind of hunting, that is, you can't even leave a scrap, a gum wrapper. A Fish and Wildlife Protection officer told me one time about using a helicopter. I was looking at helicoptering into an area I'd flown with my plane and found a spot up in a valley that I thought I might be able to land if I could get up there to move some rocks out of the way and basically make some rough improvements. And he said, don't even leave a gum wrapper behind. You cannot assist in any way. You could use a helicopter to go up and build an airstrip or something, but you can't leave anything that you're going to hunt with. You can't transport anything out with a helicopter. It's absolutely off limits. You can fish with a helicopter, but that's it. This bill simply, Madam Speaker, there's a lot of land that's off limits right now to any kind of motorized vehicle and traditional access. Federal government, through ANILCA, has closed off millions and millions of acres. And I think this bill is a reflection of the frustration of Alaskans that want to make sure that if there is a rational reason to close off some land, that the legislature simply has some oversight in that. And I don't think that's unreasonable. I think it's also a reflection of maybe the frustration of some of the appointments we've had with this administration to the game board, that there's at least a perception of some people that members that are being appointed to the game board are not necessarily looking out for traditional hunting interests. And I can tell you in my district this year when they were looking at restricting access into Area 13, I want to tell you there was I wish I could get that kind of a turnout on the subsistence issue, quite frankly. We had a town meeting that was very, very intense, and there were people adamantly opposed to it. And I would suggest that those of us that live in the more rural or urban areas that do have a dependence on fish and game to feed our families rely on some of these forms of transportation and don't take it lightly when the game board looks at restricting them. And if there's a biological reason, we need to get back to managing game for biological reasons rather than managing people. And granted, some of managing game is access and seasons and bag limits and methods and means, and we're not tying the hands of the game board to do that. So I urge the members to vote for the bill, and thank you very much.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think some of these discussions come down to often whose ox is being gored. The speaker from Sitka did mention an important factor, I think, in that defining traditional is a moving target and one that does present some challenge for us. What's traditional today may change markedly in 50 years as to what constitutes traditional. I know in my own experience in the 70s and 80s, flying over some of the game management units in the accessible from the Anchorage area, seeing trails on the ground created by ATVs and somewhat having to a little bit sardonically think about the argument at the time then against using aircraft, or at least same-day airborne hunting, because it gave people too much of an advantage, some folks said. Usually the argument came from those who used ATVs, and that it allowed people to go too far back into the wilderness. Again, coming from people, I think, in the main, who had ATVs. And, you know, I've thought about the little impact that I made on the ground when I landed compared to the tracks that they left, but, again, it was a matter of whose ox is being gored. I would like to reiterate that it is currently absolutely illegal to use any rotary winged aircraft for any in any form to aid in hunting. I've heard it's even to the point where someone who gets in trouble needs rescuing, and they've been liable to a fine from Fish and Game if, when they are rescued, they take out their game. varies with the enforcement officer, I guess, but there is, and that gets you in a problem with wanton waste and all kinds of things, but still, there's a serious prohibition against using rotary wing or helicopters in hunting. My question that I have for the bill sponsor, when I read the title of the bill, talking about traditional means of access, of course, the minute I hear traditional, I think of other activities like subsistence that's traditional. And without this bill, is it possible that the Board of Game might limit rural subsistence users from their traditional use of snow machines, four-wheelers, power boats, or aircraft in the harvest of subsistence?
Further debate? Representative Mazzick?
Wrap up, Madam. Listening to all the debate here on this bill, it's pretty impressive to see how many people talk about the different means of hunting and fishing that we do in the state of Alaska. And I just want to say that I appreciate and really commend those with their opinions, and I respect their opinions. However, Madam Speaker, with this bill here, what it does, it gives another layer of protection for Alaskans who are hunting and fishing in the state. In the last few years, there have been quite a few attempts regarding shutdown of access by special user groups, Madam Speaker. But I just want to point out that it's important to know that all Alaskans who are hunting and fishing do not try to discriminate and shut down any type of land or restrictions for other uses. I think that's really important. People who hunt and fish want to see it available for everyone. And what this bill does too, Madam Speaker, it does put the Board of Fish and the Game and Department of Game on notice that we will not tolerate with shutting down access without any public input. And they have tried that in the past, and Madam Speaker, I commend them for those efforts too, but we have to protect and ensure that all Alaskans will be able to hunt and fish, especially when the state grows. We will need this bill, and I think it's important for our state, and I appreciate everybody's support. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 168? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
24 yeas, 9 nays.
And so House Bill 168 passes the House. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move the effective date.
Motion before the body is the adoption of the effective date clause. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Berkowitz from NADA. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please lock the roll and tally the board.
23 yeas, 10 nays.
And so the effective date clause is not adopted. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for House Bill 353, Hess, amended by the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Adoption by Reference and Regulations and Providing for an Effective Date. We're in third reading.
Debate. Representative Kelly.
Madam Speaker, may we return to second reading for the purposes of actually two amendments?
The motion before the body is to return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, that being amendment number two. Without objection, we are back in second. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. If you will recall on...
Representative Kelly,
I move amendment number two.
There is objection. Representative Kelly.
As you remember on Friday when we were discussing this bill, there was some concern with some of the members of the body with the classifications of regulations that we would adopt by reference on page three of the bill. The purpose of the bill is that we can either accept those federal and national regulations that we wish to or that we wish not to. And if there's any controversy over them, it is a fairly simple process to simply not pass a statute or to change a statute to include them or not. And that's simply what we're doing here. There was some concern by some members of the bodies that they didn't want those two included, so we've taken them out in this amendment. They are accreditation manual for mental health and chemical dependency by the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, and letter M on page 3, Standards and Accreditation for the National Committee on Quality Assurance.
Further debate? Representative Davies? House Kennedys?
Sure.
House come back to order.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It was on page 4, not page 3. Thanks to the representative from District 29. We discovered that glaring error, though.
Reference on the amendment is correct. Further debate? Representative Deasy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. We're changing a reference to a statute in the Alaska Administrative Code, and I've been unable to find that statute. I wondered if somebody could dig that. It must be a law we passed this year or something.
Further debate? Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would just like to hear some rationale for why these specific ones want to be pulled out. I still haven't, now that we're on the right page, I want to hear what the policy is that we're proposing here.
Representative Roakberg?
Madam Speaker, I'll speak to the ones that are embodied in subsection 13 just for the edification of the questionnaire. Right now, the state of Alaska has no statutory standards for what is called managed care per se, or in an extension of that is what's commonly referred to as health management organizations, or HMOs. Alaska has no HMOs. We have some elements of what can be described as managed care, Madam Speaker. And when we were making inquiries last Friday about the statutory authority of which they're going to be adopting by reference these standards there too, it was referred to as the authority that was embodied in a piece of legislation that I authored in the 19th legislature, which provided some statutory authority for the department to establish pilot programs for managed care for Medicaid recipients. And so, Madam Speaker, my question is, and one of the concerns was that, in essence, we don't have a body of statutory law specifically speaking to managed care principles. And as a result, to allow the department to adopt by reference regulations without, I think, substantial legislative oversight on this issue, I think would be an error. Not that these are not good standards, particularly the quality assurance measures are obviously I think very good, but that's not the issue we're here. I don't think we want to cede our right to have overview over how these organizations would be managed without legislative input into it, Madam Speaker, at this stage of their development.
Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I was a little bit confused by the last speaker's comments. The state in and of itself is a managed care organization, given the programs that this body has asked the Department of Health and Social Services to participate, not necessarily in terms of pilot projects with in reference to the legislation that was discussed, but in terms of how we deal with our Medicaid budget as well as various other programs. So the state in and of itself is a managed care organization that is involved in managing care, not necessarily as an HMO, but definitely through the provision of Medicaid and Medicare to its citizens.
Further debate? Representative Grusendorf?
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. Let's say that I agree with the point number 13, but there's lines 8 through 10 on page 4, which is point 12. Is there an explanation why that should be removed.
Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In speaking for removal of those lines 8 through 10, my concern on this issue is that we have a lot of conflict in the state over these issues, and that it seems to me like there ought to be a public process when these accreditation issues are addressed. And if we pass this piece of legislation, then everything that comes through from the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations is automatically adopted. That would be fine if we don't have any conflicts out in the public and with the healthcare providers and counselors of chemical dependency and other issues that would fall within the scope of this language. I believe that we should have a public process. That public process could be the implementation of regulations, or it could be by statute. But either way, there is an opportunity for the public who is directly involved to be able to make those choices, and those are important issues here in the state. And the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations is a national organization, as I understand, and I think we ought to have an Alaskan way. And so, therefore, I am in support of taking out lines 8 through 10 on page 3.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, Madam Speaker, as I read this proposed language here, it seems to me the operative word is over on page 3 at the top, where it says the department may incorporate future amended versions. And by reference, and Madam Speaker, it seems to me that when the department goes through the regulation process and they decide whether or not to do this, that there is an opportunity for the public to comment. And it would be predominantly the regulated community then that would be weighing in on this, and there would be the normal public process by which regulations are adopted that would be there. So it seems to me that this would be the appropriate place for that kind of discussion to occur, rather than trying to make the 40 of us here on the floor experts on accreditation for mental health, chemical dependency, other health care facilities, and standards for accreditation of managed health care, standards for accreditation for managed behavioral health organs, those kinds of things. I mean, Madam Speaker, it just seems like we're going to be talking it's the equivalent of the infamous single wall boilers, heat exchanger units or something like that, Madam Speaker. I just suggest that maybe we don't want to be in the middle of that debate at this level, and that the rulemaking and regulation process that the department goes through would be the appropriate place. And all what we're doing in adding that here is we're not saying that that's adopted. We're just saying that the department may incorporate that. So I would, with that permissive language in there, argue that we should leave these in.
For the debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 2? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
26 yeas, 7 nays.
And so Amendment Number 2 passes the House. This brings us back to third. Senator Kelly.
Brief at ease, Madam Speaker.
House stand at ease. We're under debate on third reading. House Bill 353, is there debate? You ready for the question? Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I thank you deeper than just recognition of the floor. I thank you for not referring it to the Labor and Commerce Committee. Because if it would have been referred there, it indeed would have been 12 pages. It probably would have picked up a fiscal note when we'd be grappling with it in finance right now. What I can see of the bill, it looks like a good bill, and we should support it.
Hear, hear. Are you ready for the question? Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just wanted to point out an item here on this bill, though, is that what we are doing is, by passing this, you are giving authority to organizations to make decisions that affect citizens of Alaska. Now, people will say that, well, that's okay. I mean, these guys are, technical people, and the decisions they're going to make is all going to be in the best interest of Alaskans. But, Madam Speaker, I guess I would want to make sure that the body is aware that there's been a number of people who've commented in the literature about the rise of a technocracy in our society. And that is, a technocracy is a word used to describe the masters of technology. And when you look at the groups that are identified here, National Committee for Quality Assurance and the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, American Public Health Association, and so on, these folks are highly trained technical people. But sometimes those highly trained technical people are really not connected with regular people. And the WHO is connected with regular people. Well, I guess I would submit that we are. That as the elected representatives, we are the voice of regular people. And that if we really want to maintain control over these technical professionals, that we would want to make sure that when they present their suggestions for change, that they come to us for review. By passing this piece of legislation, what you're doing, or what this body is doing, is just basically saying, well, we are willing to trust the technocracy to do the right thing. I hope that's a good decision.
Representative Kelly.
Madam Speaker, just a little clarification that these standards are adopted through regulation. And the question is, for instance, in Medicaid, are we going to be a part of the Medicaid system or not? And if we are, there are pages and pages and pages and pages of codes and standards. And occasionally those get updated. And we have adopted by regulation the Medicaid standards, and they have gone through the federal process of being adopted through regulation. But when we want to be billers of Medicaid, for instance, we all need to be playing from kind of the same sheet of music, the hospitals, the state, and the federal government. And so if a code gets changed, we need to change that code. We don't need to go through the regulation process to go from O-50230 to O-50231 or whatever the change might be. And so to put to rest representative from Mountain View's concerns, these are adopted by the regulation process. It is future changes to the codes and standards that create mounds of paperwork and have and aren't addressing substantive issues. And if they are, again, we have to determine whether we're going to be in the Medicaid program or not. If we're not, I guess then we have to throw out the whole thing. But if we are, we're going to have to take some of the changes that they make on the national level. But these are adopted, they do go through the regulation process to begin with.
Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 353? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
32 yeas, 2 nays.
And so House Bill 353 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on committee substitute for HB 353 has to be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Permission to move back up the calendar briefly for introduction of guests.
Without objection.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery is a friend and a constituent, and coming down here probably going to talk to us about oil and gas, Mr. Randy Ruger.
Representative Cario.
Madam Speaker, I'd like to offer notice of reconsideration on House Bill 168.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 168. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
There are no citations on today's calendar.
That's right. Amazing. Brings us down to unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May I move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from the call of the House for the following times. Representative Cubina from 1:41 p.m. Plain Time Wednesday, April 8th until 9:26 p.m. Plain Time Monday, April 13th. And that Representative Hudson's excused absence be extended until 2:17 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, April 9th.
Without objection, those members will be shown as excused. Under unfinished business, also would like to hold for you to be sure and hold your bill packets for House Bill 380 and 462. I'll stand briefly, these, Mr. Majority Leader. House come to order. Without objection, we're going to move up the calendar to read across messages from the other body. Would the clerk please read the message from the other body?
A message dated April 6th stating the Senate has passed Senate Bill 299 by Senator Lehman, an act relating to the treatment of well-test flares, non-road engines, and aggregated fuel burning equipment associated with non-road engines under the state's air quality control program, defining stationary source for purposes of the state's air quality program, and transmitted it for consideration.
That will be referred to Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the other body.
This brings us back down to unfinished business. Further unfinished business? Committee announcements? Representative Williams?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The House Transportation Committee will meet today at 1 p.m. or a half hour after adjournment. Take up House Bill 480.
Further committee announcements? General announcements? Representative Hanley?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I've just, now it's a little bit late. Today is Tartan Day, and for those with Scottish descent and those that would like to celebrate it, there were bagpipes starting at noon across the street, and I just wanted to announce that for anybody that would like to participate. I'm not sure if anybody's wearing any kilts or not.
General announcements? Special orders, Representative Martin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like the permission of the House and the floor to talk about agriculture land.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Madam Speaker, it came to my attention that there is a lot of agriculture land available, and I thought the legislators here, those with deep pockets, might like to bid on this process. But the problem is that you have to be there on-site bidding only, which we have argued about years ago, and I thought the problem was solved when we used to have open land for people to bid on. Even here in Anchorage, there's some parts of the land available, I mean in Juneau, and a couple of people who intended to be there at the time and offered good prices for the parts of the land available suddenly got caught in a snowstorm. Some of them couldn't get out of their backyards or whatever the problem was. In any case, we learned from hard experience that on-site bidding is not the best way to have land auctioned when you want to get the best price. Now, I'm going to announce for you and for anyone else who may be interested, because the announcements so far have been very, very secret, that there is a part of land called Bremer's Farm, 2,400 acres of land. Now, the good thing about this is that it will be appraised, but included in the appraised value will not be the subsidy that the government pays every year. And so on the contract for this farmer not to raise anything, I just think it's unbelievable in Alaska where we demanded more and more land for farmers to grow wheat, to grow barley, to grow whatever it is, and then immediately to go right in and make deals with the federal government to be paid well, not to grow food. In this particular case here, there is still an outstanding contract on that part of land of $700,000 to pay to the owner by the federal government, Bureau of Farms, not to grow anything on it. But that's not included in the price of the farm value. There's also a value of land outside of Tok, about 900 acres of land, and the guarantee is $33,000 per year, not to grow anything on it. I just think very few people know that this public land, it will be up for sale on May the 31st, but you have to be there. There's a lot of people that can give the government, the Department of Agriculture, a good price, a good offering for that land, if they didn't have to be there. If they do what other areas are doing, allow open bidding or closed bidding by mail. And this is my request because evidently it's top secret. Shh, don't turn the TVs on. We don't want anybody to know that this is a public auction. A very valuable land, but you must be there. I hope the Department of Agriculture opens its mind a little bit, and if they're there to serve the people and get the best price out of the land, that they make it well known throughout the state, and that they would receive legitimate, qualified, bonded bid by mail, not on-site. On-site means one thing. Only state officials and federal officials know about those parts of the land that are going to be up for bid. And only they know that the contracts from the federal government not to grow land are still there. They're upheld. I don't know why the state don't get to keep it for 10 years and get to $70,000 per year just on that one farm. But the main idea is that I think it's very, very bad government policy to say on-site only bidding. Secondly, I don't think we're going to get the best price available if we do not open it up to all Alaskan citizens by mail, bona fide price. And then also, if they're going to assess the true value of that land, they should put in there the $700,000 that someone's going to get paid for not growing anything. Thank you.
I'll stand at ease.
Request came. They can get a copy of these parts of the land from the Division of Agriculture in Fairbanks, from the federal government in Delta Junction, and I think maybe the Juneau office should have it. Thank you.
Representative Davies.
Speaker, I request permission to speak on further reading relative to chapters 1 through 6.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I've been thinking about saying something about this for a little while, but I was spurred on by a piece on the National Public Radio this morning about a book that's been published in Alaska called Authentic Alaska, Voices of Its Native Writers. This book was compiled by or edited by Susan Andrews and John Creed from our Chukchi Community College in Kotzebue, and the authors are actually various Alaska Native students who have attended the community college there and other writing classes of the university. So, Madam Speaker, and one of the things that caught my attention on the piece this morning was that this is, for the publisher, this has been a bestseller, apparently. So it's doing well. I've read maybe a third of it so far. I find it very interesting. The reason why I titled my speech this morning Further Reading, it does go along in the direction of trying to get a view of what life is like in rural Alaska for a number of these folks, and I would commend it to you. But it's also, I think, an example. I'd like to celebrate some of the accomplishments of the faculty and students at the University of Alaska, and in this case at one of our community colleges, that being the one out in Kotzebue. So thank you, and commend this to your reading list.
Further special orders, Representative Kemplin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. Permission to address the body on the subject of champions.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This past weekend, there was a memorable event that occurred down at Center Bowl. We have a legislative bowling league, and there was a championship round held on Saturday night. And it happened to be between two teams. One, my team, Speed Metal 2, and the other team was a team where the minority leader is a member of, the Gene Pool. So we played for the championship, Madam Speaker. And after we played our two games, after we played our games, we were tied. We actually had to go into a tiebreaker game. And at the end of that tiebreaker game, our team, Speed Metal 2, had to pass the mantle of championship to the Gene Pool. They won by 21 pins. The members are Katrina Matheny, Tom Van Brocklin, and our esteemed representative from Valdez. So I guess I would just like to say congratulations to the new champions of the Legislative Bowling League.
Representative Bogan.
Madam Speaker, I request permission of the body to speak on a great Alaskan tradition.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Madam Speaker, before I served my time in caucus Saturday, and I say that kind of like a sentence, I did have the opportunity to go out fishing and was fortunate enough that God blessed me with a very nice king salmon. And, you know, I always look forward to this time of year because I think, as all Alaskans do, the return of the fish. We get fish a little bit earlier down here than other parts of the state. But one of the things I did, it was a tradition in my family, was to share. And we gave some to friends, and we fed as many of our friends and family as we possibly could. In fact, we consumed the whole fish this weekend and had a glorious time doing it. And so I wish all Alaskans across this state well, and I know the days are getting longer, and the yearn to be out in the wilds are overcoming a lot of us, and hopefully that yearn will get us out of here on time this year. And I wish all Alaskans well in their hunting and gathering season this year. Thank you.
Further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I should announce, as a recipient of part of the fish, I don't think I qualify for a subsistence permit, but I certainly appreciate the thought. With that, Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 7th.
We're adjourned until 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Get on that land.